The Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast is proud to be sponsored by Dr. Spork's 3D Terrain. From retro greenskin outposts to elven fortresses and obelisks, this is hands down the best nostalgic scenery you'll find out there, and all at stupidly reasonable prices. Check it out for yourself by heading over to bedroombattlefields.com/spork, that's S-P-O-R-K, and turn your tabletop into a scene from White Dwarf circa 1994. Andy Chambers not included. Brought to you by bedroombattlefields.com, this is the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. Earlier this year, David from New Zealand posted some pictures on the Bedroom Battlefields Discord community of a really devastating flood that had hit his neighbourhood and his house. There was photos of one particular photo which got picked up in news outlets all across the world of David's car sitting on a garden fence. Just photos of the street, you know, the water was really high. Loads of basements and stuff flooded, including David's own basement, which had all his hobby stuff in it. So yeah, it's been a tough old time for him, and he's had a few months to kind of pick up the pieces and just, you know, get back to normality or some semblance of it at this stage. You know, it's still not that long ago that it happened. I think it was April. So yeah, David reached out and he was keen to come on and have a wee chat about it. And you know, I was really interested as well, just to find out where he was at with everything and how he was kind of getting back on track, not just with his hobby, but obviously his life as well. So yeah, here's David now, and he'll talk us through exactly what happened and how it panned out from there.
I live in Wellington, New Zealand, which is much like Britain, is an island nation, and a lot like Britain, gets its fair copper rain. And wind and unpredictable weather patterns. And I guess with, you know, the impact of climate change, one of the unfortunate consequences that we're seeing in our side of the South Pacific is more extreme severe weather events. And there's been a number over the last few years that has hit New Zealand, in some cases quite traumatically. In our case, like I said, towards the end of April, an unexpected deluge hit a very localized part of our city, Wellington. And we received something like, I think, 70 millimeters of water or milliliters of water in an hour. And for those who don't know, Wellington's quite a hilly city. So when it rains like that, the water will just pour off the hillsides. In this case, it overwhelmed the stormwater system, and at about, I don't know, I think it was 3 a.m. in the morning, my wife woke me up, and I say woke me up because we have a toddler, and she'd already come into our bed, and I'd gone into her bed so that everyone could try to go to sleep. So I was blissfully unaware, but my wife woke me up at about 3 a.m. and said, "Dave, the cars are moving." I was like, "What?" And I jumped out of bed. And I laugh about it now, but at the time it was pretty intense. I went to look out the window, so it was pitch black, raining, and the water was just coming up and up and up. And our street, because it's hilly, we live down the end of our street, so it backs onto almost like a little basin type area. So as we know with basins, they fill up with water until the plug gets pulled and the water drains. And the bottom of our street, unfortunately, the stormwater system was over capacity. It just basically failed all around our neighborhood. And so wherever there was a basin, the water just came up and up and up. For us, we were pretty fortunate in that our house was, although we were down at the worst end of the street to be hit, it was up high enough that the floodwaters didn't hit our living areas. So luckily our bedrooms, kitchen, bathrooms were safe. Whereas our downstairs underneath our house, where I store all my miniatures, where we store sports equipment, we had a laundry, all that was taken out in the floodwaters. And so sadly, as we sort of started the next morning, we sort of began to see the full extent of the damage, because with the floodwaters, it's not just the water itself, it's all the other bits of dirt, could be sewerage, you just don't know. It gets picked up in this water, it's a health hazard, you have to treat it as being toxic. This just went all through the bottom, underneath our house. It went completely through some of our neighbors' houses, who unfortunately basically probably lost about 90% of their possessions. So we were waking up on a Monday morning. We're not waking up. We'd already woken up. But after the flood of water subsided, we were in our gumboots, our Wellingtons, as you Brits like to say, going downstairs, starting to assess the damage. And my neighbor messaged us and said, by the way, if you want to know where your car is, it's on the fence at the end of the road. And I was like, what? And sure enough, we walked out of our house. Two houses down is the end of our street. It backs onto it's a bit of a cul-de-sac. So this car was just placed up on the our neighbor's fence. And it was a really surreal, because during the rains, we could actually saw the cars starting to lift up in the water, bobbing around, floating off. It was like a massive stew. If you could imagine just a tempest of, I don't know, bits and bobs just floating around cars. And it just goes to show the amount of water we had in our street actually managed to lift our car out of our carport down onto the road, and then about 30 or 40 meters down the street. And it just so happened it landed on top of a fence. And once that happened, and once those first photos started coming out, we were really hit by journalists saying we want to come talk to you. Can you come talk to us? And so we invited some town to come and have a look around. They looked around our neighborhood. They took some photos, took some quotes. And then, weirdly, or maybe unsurprisingly, because of the way the car had ended on the fence, it just became the picture associated with these floods. And it kind of went around the world. It went first through the New Zealand media. Then people were like, oh, you made the New York Times or the BBC or wherever else. But yeah, it was a pretty crazy event. And one that I guess you just don't, you never want to go anyone to go through that kind of thing. And I mean, our family, we feel pretty lucky that we weren't more severely affected. We're lucky that we can live in our house. Some of our neighbors are still, they're probably out of their houses for probably until the end of the year at least, because they have to repair so much, or they have to make decisions about whether to move back in. So it's been a really big, just a really big event that's hit the whole of our sort of part of the city. It's been pretty surreal to live through, I think. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, what a thing to go through, and you could obviously look back on it now, but at the time it just must have been, you must have been feeling all sorts of emotions, none of them good. I'm not going to be crass and say that your miniature collection or that would have been one of the first things that you thought about, but eventually you must have, once you'd made sure the family was safe and dealt with your priorities. So what was kind of the script there?
Yeah, so yeah, we were lucky. There was no immediate risk to our family, to life and limb. And I think once we knew our neighbours were safe, it was like, okay, cool. We can now at least start assessing what's the damage. And in our case, I think, so we have an internal staircase that goes down to our sort of basement level. And I knew that it was not going to be good, because we'd seen how high the water had got in terms of how far it had come up the stairs. So we knew that it was just probably going to be a real mess. And it was. What we'd seen was the water had kind of picked up and tipped over shelving units that unfortunately hadn't been secured to the war. And in a lot of cases, that was where quite a lot of boxes of miniatures, miniature terrain. Luckily not books. We'd recently renovated our house, so all the books were upstairs. I knew that it was going to be bad. And it was a matter of just going down and kind of seeing just how bad things were. And I think when it's this kind of weather events, it's interesting how random the destruction can be, or the impact on miniatures or terrain or other gaming aids equipment can be, in that some boxes, if they were high enough up, were fine. Other boxes, you know, were submerged totally in water. Others had would probably have been all right, except they'd been sort of lifted up by the floodwaters, shifted, and then dropped. And so you get a whole range of water damage. You get things being broken. You get the whole issue of, like, these things are toxic, so you have to treat them as being toxic because you don't know what's been in the water. So yeah, it was one of the things I had in the back of my mind, was just like, this is gonna end me, eh? this could potentially have ended my hobby then and there, in many respects, in terms of just the potential for destruction. But fortunately, and probably we can get into this in more detail if you're really interested, that I guess the good thing about my collection was predominantly what I had are plastic and metal minis, and they can actually take the cleanup process. They're pretty robust. So, I mean, particularly metal miniatures can take being washed in soapy water, being sterilized in bleach quite well. And once you've done that, they're okay to handle. Obviously, basing is an issue if you've got like MDF bases. Terrain, unfortunately, in my case, I had a lot of MDF terrain because I play a lot of Infinity, which requires a lot of terrain, and a lot of it was MDF, and a lot of it, unfortunately, you just cannot sterilize MDF in any meaningful way, so a lot of that has gone. But I think on the whole, I think I've come out all right in terms of the fact that a lot of what I have, I could clean up, I could sterilize, could make it safe. And even though there's been damage, I feel like I can kind of get over time, get through repair jobs. There's a lot of repainting that has to happen, a lot of kind of organizing what bits go where and which models, that's still to happen. But managed to save all my paints through this sort of like sterilization sort of process. So there is hope. But yeah, at the time, before really understanding the kind of full scope of what had happened and the full impact on things, I've got to say, it's real like heart in your mouth moments, because you think, well, how much time have I spent, you know, of my life? How many years have I put into creating miniatures, creating terrain? And to have that potentially all go in a matter of an hour and a half of heavy rain is just kind of, no normal person should have to sort of think about that, because it's heartbreaking.
Yeah. Yeah. You talked about, you mentioned painting there. So was there a decent ratio of these miniatures that were painted, and did that basically mean they had to be stripped? What was the kind of score there?
Yeah, pretty much. So it's interesting in that, yes, a lot were painted. I don't know, a ratio, probably like something like maybe 60-ish percent, if I'm being, maybe 60% painted. So probably got a lot of unpainted stuff for sure, but surprisingly painted quite a lot of, what I had. In the main, they haven't had to be stripped, because I'd varnished them. the varnish generally has tended to resist the worst effects of bleach. I have noticed that, because I've used different varnishes over the years, like some have been better, and some have, in terms of being able to resist what bleach would otherwise do to a paint, to paintwork. So some have been really good, and there's no need to repaint. Others have kind of been discolored, or it seems like the way it's reacted with the bleach, the varnish has reacted with the bleach, it started to turn them all cloudy, and the stuff's all starting to flake off. It's bizarre. I guess it's just different chemical reactions. But I'm not having to do too much repainting, I don't think. I'm still really in the assessing phase of how much repainting is going to need to happen. More probably for stuff that's just been damaged because it's been tipped over, scraped, or bits have broken off, like an arm's broken off and it's taken some of the paint with it, that kind of thing, I think.
How did you kind of feel once you'd assessed the damage and had time to kind of consider what was ahead of you? Like, what were you kind of feeling at that point?
To be honest, it was a bit on the back of my mind because, I mean, there was just so much other stuff to focus on. We had to move, like, in the initial stages, we had to move out of our house. We put all the things that had survived the flood, we had to kind of clean and put in storage. We moved in with my mum, thank God, for about 5 or 6 weeks while our house was drying out. There was just so much other stuff to focus on. I didn't even really get the opportunity much to think about the totality of it all until maybe even only a few weeks ago. And like, as weird as it sounds, I think it's provided a bit of healthy separation between the pressure of like wanting to get things painted, wanting to get things on the table, wanting to play a lot of games. It's kind of just eased that off a bit because, and I don't know if everyone feels that, but maybe from time to time they do, like this urge to want to get out and do things, particularly like in my case, we have a toddler. So that's in the past has stopped some of the gaming opportunities, but yeah, it's been interesting, like psychologically, how you kind of go through the those whole levels of like, you know, anger, upset, acceptance, and then looking to move forward. I think now I feel like I'm in a pretty good space psychologically to be able to kind of just not stress the big job that's in front of me, but maybe just pick at it, like chip away at it as almost like its own rebuild process, right? It's like at some point I know I'm going to get to, I don't know, some World War II bolt action miniatures, and I'll be able to look over them properly. I'll be able to work on what needs to be fixed. I'll be able to maybe assemble some more and paint them. Yeah. It's a strange one. I think I'm still not 100% through the whole sort of process yet. So yeah, it might have to be a follow up chat on that one. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, obviously your hobby doesn't boil down to this terrible event either. Like, you know, let's maybe go back in time a wee bit and just learn a bit more about how you came into the hobby in the first place.
Oh yeah, sure. Probably like a lot of the people you've interviewed, Matthew, I would say the first kind of like definitive kind of hobby gateway is probably through HeroQuest, which came through New Zealand in the early 1990s, at least. I would have been about probably 9 or 10 when we got our first copy. And I loved that game. I used to play it a lot with friends and my brother. I think that had really kind of just started cementing this whole kind of like concept that there are these games out there where you can kind of act out, immerse yourself in a fantasy setting or a sci-fi setting. I think also what was really kind of like quite monumental, I think, is probably when I was about, even before the HeroQuest thing, probably when I was about 7 or 8, my parents got me a copy of the Hobbit graphic novel. I don't know if you've seen that one. It's like a comic book form of the Hobbit, and just the kind of combination of the visuals of that, plus, you know, the greatness of Tolkien. I think that really kind of set me off on down the road of like fantasy is a good thing. And as I sort of got a bit older and going into towards high school, people in classes might have had like a GW catalog, and I was like, oh, what's this? This looks really cool. I remember going into high school, and I went to a boarding school, and one of the guys there was like, oh, there's this amazing store in town. We should go check it out. They sell minis. And this would have been in 1997. So I think like fifth edition of Warhammer had dropped the year before. It was near the drop of third edition 40K, but going into those stores and sort of seeing all the range of possibilities was pretty inspiring. And I remember, I don't know, maybe I must have been about 14, and I got the original Necromunda box set for probably my birthday, I think. And that kind of really sort of sparked the hobby for me. And it was kind of quickly followed by just trying to acquire as much as I could. So yeah, coming through the sort of Games Workshop inroads into the hobby. I mean, that was really it for me. And I mean, I think New Zealand is obviously kind of the other side of the world to the UK, but connected pretty closely culturally. And there's always been really big kind of gaming scenes here, and some pretty well-established gaming clubs. Unfortunately, where I spent my teenage years, it wasn't super predominant as a hobby, but there was still enough people around that there could be gaming stores, that there could be stores that stocked 40K, stores that stocked role-playing games. So there's always been a community, and I think it's just one that, I just found myself kind of naturally kind of slipping into, having friends at school that played. We would sort of slowly try to amass Warhammer Fantasy armies. I remember Mordheim dropping, and that becoming really like, you know, just really, I think one of those games that really kind of captured people's imaginations. I remember do you remember Inquisitor? I don't know, you might have been out of the hobby by then, but the 54 millimeter game.
Yeah, I was away
game,
by then, yeah.
Yeah, but I remember that dropping and that kind of just blowing away some of my friends, just and me as well. It's just like, this is so cool. I don't think we ever actually played a game, but the miniatures themselves were amazing, and the, you know, the John Blanche artwork and the rule books, RIP, that was just, just really evocative. And so I would have come pretty strongly through the Games Workshop, sort of pipeline until, I don't know, probably around fifth edition of 40K was probably when I sort of started to lose some of the interest in the GW side of things. And then a little bit later on, probably took a bit, I probably had a bit of a break in there from all aspects of the hobby, and then started to kind of like really get my juices flowing again. Probably in my early 30s, I started looking at some of the other alternative kind of games out there, some of the Mantic games. And the one that really kind of appealed to me at that time was Infinity, which is a 28 millimeter sci-fi game. And probably since maybe 2016, I've been playing it on and off been playing it quite a bit. And it's probably been my go-to game for the best part of a decade. But I've also, you know, as I've grown older, I've sort of, you know, I hit 40 and then started discovering historical miniatures. So, you know, started looking at Bolt Action, looking at Saga. I just think we're in such a good space as a, you know, as a consumers of hobby stuff. You can find whatever you want. And it's sort of always on the lookout for, you know, new games to use old minis, or, you know, new games as an excuse to buy new minis. So, yeah.
If we overlook the obvious massive disruption you've had this year, what sort of games, I mean, you might have mentioned them already, what sort of games are kind of on your radar right now?
So, yeah, so I would say at the moment, there's probably, at the moment right now is Infinity again. I mean, I played a lot over the last 10 years. I took a bit of a hiatus because I was feeling a bit burnt out. But I reckon earlier, since sort of like the end of last year, I've started to try and pick it up a bit more again. Started to kind of like really rediscover the mojo for that. But that aside, I've started to get into Saga, which I think is a great game, but unfortunately I don't play enough of it. And also the other one was Bolt Action. And that one has been really cool because that's one that my son, he's 10 now, that he thinks is pretty interesting. And we've had a couple of like really sort of stripped down rules-wise games of that. And so I would say probably those three are the ones that are kind of on my radar. Infinity is the game I play most often. It's probably the one I enjoy the most.
What do you like about Infinity?
Probably what drew me to it as a game, like the one was of course the miniatures, and we could probably talk about that further in another question. But as a game, I found it to be just so immersive. It's bizarre in that a game that's so rules heavy and quite crunchy, once you kind of get the hang of the rules as you're playing, just feels so, for me anyway, I just get lost in the games themselves. It really sort of takes me in, outside of being a player, and into the games at its best. I haven't quite found a game that's really taking you in so deep tactically, in a sort of like in a skirmish kind of game. And I think it's, yeah, like I said, it's very crunchy. So you have to get used to the unexpected happening to you and not really being able to do much about it. So if you know, it runs a sort of a critical hit system, and also allows the reactive player to be able to kind of undertake actions. Sometimes that could be to shoot back at you as you're shooting at them, and every so often they'll get lucky and they might. Take you out. So it's quite a brutal game. I've made a lot of really good friends through it over the last 10 years, and you know, people who from other cities who you may only see them if you go up to play a tournament. But the tournaments are, you know, it's not a huge community, so you kind of get to know everyone pretty well. It's interesting, eh? It is a fun game, but it's not to everyone's liking.
You did talk about miniatures there, and it was perhaps in reference to a question I wanted to ask you about. Is there a particular miniature that you'd consider genuinely perfect?
There is. So I think as I was starting to get into Infinity, I would say I started my collection a fair amount of time before I started playing the games, before I really sort of found the community. So I would kind of like buy some of these miniatures, paint them up, look what's happening on the forums, look at the new releases that were coming out. And I think there was one in particular that just I thought was just outstanding. And it, I don't know if you know of Angel Heraldes, who is a pretty well-known painter now. In the mid-2010s, he was pretty much the main painter for Corvus Belli, who produced Infinity. And he would paint display models for them pretty routinely. And at the time, he had a pretty, I mean, I don't know, I didn't see a lot of other, wasn't necessarily checking a lot of other painters at that time, but his style was just incredible. And he's just a very good job of using all, you know, light, shade. He could just really make these miniatures pop. He was really adept at using an airbrush. So the one model that I think I still look at and still kind of gives me this kind of sense of where I was in 2015, 2016 was this faction of Infinity called Hawk Islam. And one miniature in particular was a motorcycle rider, a Hawk Islam Kuma rider. And it's this guy who's looks like a really rough biker on a big chopper. I'll flick you a link to one of the pictures in a minute, Matthew. And he just looks so cool. He's in his leathers. He's sitting atop this chopper. He's got this amazing tattoo across his chest. He's got stubble. He looks like he's been through eating shit, rugged as. And I remember looking at this and just thought, that's just outstanding, both the sculpt and just the paint job. Like these amazing motorcycle flame patterns on his motorbike. It just looked incredible. And it just really, I was real close to running out and just buying that mini, and maybe just like, you know, I didn't play that faction or that army at the time. But I thought, oh man, maybe I should pick these guys up. I never did, but I still look at that mini, and I was looking at it in prep for this show, and I was looking back at it and just thinking, that's just so good. So for me, I think that's the one that I keep, you know, I keep thinking about.
Parsec's Diary is an audio journal bonus series on Patreon, chronicling the adventures of my 5 Parsecs from home crew, the Lucky Strikes. Follow this beleaguered gang of criminal scum as they're pursued around the galaxy by lethal cyborgs, xenomorphs, and budget ale-inspired bounty hunters. Parsec's Diary is available now on patreon.com/bedroombattlefields. That's patreon.com/bedroombattlefields. And now, back to the show. What's next up for you then, Dave? Like, what's on the more immediate horizon for you, hobby-wise?
Hobby-wise, well, there's a Infinity tournament happening here in Wellington and next weekend. So I'm going to go along to that, which I'm pretty pumped for, to see a bunch of mates again. I haven't really been playing very much, so it's nice to kind of to look forward to that. I've been sort of starting to, I don't know, after my last game of Infinity, I got really inspired and started writing up a bit of a short story of a game. So I'm kind of keen to kind of just keep working at that, and maybe sort of looking at a tournament as a kind of like a bit of an inspiration to write more of this kind of story about these bunch of ne'er-do-well space guys. I've had some really cool support from some companies. When I said what had happened with the floods, a couple of companies reached out and offered to send some stuff over, which I was really happy to receive. So big shout out to Deep Cut Studios. I'm really looking forward to unboxing and playing with this map that they sent me. And likewise, Warsenal, which is a small boutique Infinity terrain company and shop in Florida, sent over some terrain. So I'm slowly assembling that as well. Other than that, just sort of trying to dip my toe back into just rebuilding minis and just reconnecting with some of my gaming mates who I haven't seen a lot of over the past few months, and of course listening to Bedroom Battlefields.
Yeah, of course.
of course.
No, I mean, it's great to hear that you're able to look out the other side of this, and you've obviously managed to keep a good attitude and outlook in spite of all the the challenges and that as well. So yeah, thanks for sharing that story, and obviously sorry you went through it, but I guess all you could do now is kind of rebuild and crack on, isn't it?
Yeah, no, that's right. And I think you can get stuck in the what's happened, or you know, and people do, but I think it's far more positive to try to move forward. And actually, you know, look for the silver linings in life, eh? I think we're pretty fortunate that we've got a great gaming community here, and got a good group of mates who are into it, and it's a good way to kind of pass the time and enjoy doing what we do. So yeah, I think it sucks that it's happened, but there are better things ahead. But it's been a real pleasure to come on and share the story. I would say, for other people who have gone through these kind of events before, like poor old Mark, probably knows, he's probably come pretty close to something similar. It's not fun. It can also bring people together. And I think, I've had a lot of kind of support through the Discord as well, people checking in. And it's really nice to see.
Thanks very much for your time, Dave. I've really enjoyed the conversation. Is there anywhere you would like to point the listener towards to check out at all?
I don't really run any social media channels. I'd point the listener towards your Discord. I'm going to hit that. Sorry, not your Discord, your Patreon. I'll hit that way myself. I think just wanted to sort of shout out the work that you do, and the amazing stuff that happens through the Discord is really cool. Unfortunately, I haven't been able to kind of get into the campaign stuff as much as I'd want, but it's really, really great to kind of like pop on and just see what people are doing and, share a bit. It's a cool place. I think you've created something that's really beneficial to a lot of people. So I would point people straight back towards your channels, hey.
Massive thanks to David for the chat there, and thanks also for that wee shout out, David, for the Patreon. I really do appreciate that. You could find that at bedroombattlefields.com/Patreon, or in fact patreon.com/bedroombattlefields. You could go arse for elbow, as they say. So on there there'll be more content from David. I usually do a little bonus Q&A. They last about 10 minutes, so I've got some recording questions. I really enjoy asking those to the guests, and you'll find recent guests as well. They've got a little bonus episode on there. We had Ted on recently, Joe McCulloch. So you'll find bonus content with them as well. And like I say, I'm going to be posting up the bonus episode with David in the coming days. I've also been posting on Patreon a little 5 parsecs from home audio diary. So 5 parsecs from home. As I think I've mentioned recently on the show, it's something that I've really started to get into, and I have formed up a crew and I have started this campaign, and it's been really fun so far. So I've been doing these little audio diary entries, just kind of talking through where the crew are at, what challenges they're facing, who they're fighting, who's got injured. So I've been doing that and posting them on the Patreon as well. So if you want some bonus content, there's certainly plenty of it over at patreon.com/bedroombattlefields, and plenty more in the pipeline too, because I've got more conversations lined up and certainly more games of 5 parsecs from home as well. So big thanks to everyone who's supporting me over there, and I hope you're enjoying the extra content. All right, that is it for this episode of the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. Thanks as always for listening, and we'll chat again on the next one.